Hi everybody, my name is Anto Fernandi. I'm the International Delegate for the Asturias 21 Foundation in the organization of the International Hall of Gala Ciders, which happens to be in Sisión, Asturias, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 62. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rio Windcaller and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are traveling to Asturias, which is a region found within the country of Spain. And we'll be speaking with Anzu Fernandez, and there'll be more on that in just a moment. Well now, it is 2017, and we have hit the road running in Ciderville. So I'm going to get right into some events before we get to our chat with Anzu. First off is CiderCon. This is a yearly conference put on by the United States Association of Cider Makers. It's their trade organization, and this year it takes place in Chicago. The dates are February 8th, 9th, and 10th. And I do recommend arriving on the 7th, which is a Tuesday, because if you are going to be attending any of the workshops on Wednesday morning, the first one begins at 8 a.m. in the morning, and that's navigating TTB cider registration and compliance. And the TTB is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade Organization. So if you are attending that, you want to make sure that you are in Chicago. And as another reminder, don't hesitate to book your hotel room now. It's going to be at the Hilton, and they have some amazing room rates, and that block rate is going to expire on January 10th, coming right up. So do it this week. Go up to your laptop or your smartphone and plug in CiderCon and go to the links for the United States Association of Cider Makers. Good stuff there. I will be attending. I arrive on the 7th, Tuesday the 7th in the morning. I'm going to check into the hotel. And then in the afternoon, I hope you could join me at the Northman. I'll be at the Northman for 4:30 in the afternoon. And I'll be in the back booth hanging out with folks and recording cider stories. It will be a whole range of stuff. There'll be more on that when I actually have a guest coming up in just a couple weeks, Brian Rootson of the Northman. And Brian's just a real powerhouse, a great speaker, and he gives us the lowdown of going to Chicago. Now, if you are in Chicago, whether you are a cider maker or not, or you're passing through, you might want to think about getting your tickets now for the Chicago Cider Summit. Because as soon as CiderCon ends, the next day on Saturday is the Chicago Cider Summit, and they have two sessions. The first one starts at 11 a.m. in the morning. I love these people. These are Ciderville people who start cider sessions at 11 a.m. The first session goes from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's a four-hour session. Then the next one takes place 4 to 8 p.m. So it's going to be a full day of cider tasting and some amazing people to meet. I know that. Cider Chat will have a table set up there. I will be on hand at that table. So please come by and visit, and I'll bring some cider swag. Oh, it's going to be a fantastic time. And to top it all off, before CiderCon happens and through the week, it's Chicago Cider Week. And, you know, people call it Cider Week, but it's more than a week. It's like over a week. Cider Weeks are now becoming like 10 days. It's kind of like our own, like, alternate reality, parallel universe, where the rest of the world kind of compartmentalizes a week into 7 days. But in Ciderville, it always extends outside of that week. And that's what I really love about this community. So I will have links to all that in the show notes for this episode number 62. Next up, how to leave a review and ratings on iTunes for Cider Chat podcast via your smartphone. So try to get your hand on your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over already and take the time to do this review and rating. I'll be back in just a moment so you could get yourself ready for that. Well, now that you have your little smartphone in hand, that's your iPhone here, you're going to go to your podcast app, which is purple. It has a, kind of like a little figure and two circles around it. You open that up, and then you go down to the right-hand corner, and it says search. You just put in the words at the top bar, Cider Chat. It could be one word or two words for this purpose. And up will come a little page that has podcast episodes. You see, well, the most recent episode right now I'm looking at is episode 60, Nicole Todd. There's also the Musée du Paris, episode 61, Mike Schilling. It jumps all around, gives you a couple of choices. And then below that, it says podcasts, and there's the artwork for Cider Chat. So you just press that little artwork, and up will come the main page. And this is where you could also subscribe to Cider Chat. And you'll see three bars, details, reviews, and related. You want to press reviews. And then below in purple on my phone, it says write a review. You just press that in there. You have to be signed into the iTunes store. A lot of folks have an iTunes account. If you don't, then maybe you want to think about getting one, because it's a good place to do all this kind of stuff and get apps and information. Once you do that, then you will see a page that says write a review. You put in a little title. It could be something like the most recent review. I see I have a new one, and it says Love Cider Chat, and you could rate it from 1 to 5 stars. I hope you give it a 5-star rating like this person did. This was written by Erica Jetter, and she just wrote this really short piece, and it doesn't have to be much. It could just be, as Erica wrote, thank you, Rhea, for Cider Chat. I am a home cider maker and cider enthusiast in Virginia. Woohoo! Great state of Virginia. And I enjoy the warmth and friendliness of the Cider Chats so much. I always learn something new when I listen, especially enjoy listening on cider bottling days like today. And that was posted on January 2nd, which was just a day ago. And go, Erica. Cool. Bottling cider. Wow. Well, great time to do that. I'm hoping it all came out perfect. And what a nice thought, thinking that you're doing that. So, like Erica, go for it. She's really involved in the cider online community, a good gal indeed. And if you do that, it really helps move this podcast forward and up the scale so that people could see it. Because right now, you know who's like really in the forefront on podcasts are beer and wine podcasts. And we need some love for Cider Chat. Otherwise, we get kind of tucked down. And if you are, certainly if you're a commercial cider maker, I would hope that you would see this as a really big benefit for getting people out there who are searching the web and getting the voices of cider from around the world right into their earbuds. There's nothing more powerful than that. So please take the time to do a review and rating today. I am biting at the bit, much like a horse ready for the race, to share with you the tales of my trip to Asturias in September 2016, just a few months ago. But before we get into the main chat with Anzu Fernandez, I need to give you a bit of the background story. Last August, if you had told me that by the end of September, I would be arriving in Asturias to attend the International Hall of Gala Ciders, well, I just wouldn't have believed you. I had already confirmed all my travel arrangements, My plane tickets were bought. I was to fly into Amsterdam and out of Paris because at the tail end of my work on the border of Belgium, I was heading down to France to have a quick visit with Agathe Letthier of Manoir d'April and Didier Bedu, the president of the Appellation and Control for Cider, Poiret, Calvados, and Pamou, and the renowned cider maker Eric Bordelais. All those chats and the visit to Appels and Padden while in Amsterdam, a new cider shop, can be found as a link to the show notes in this episode number 62. But that all changed when, on August 30th, in the late afternoon, an email came in with the subject title, Invitation to International Hall of Gala Ciders. And it was from La Cidra, Asturian cider. Yay! Attached to the email were three PDF files. They each explained both how to sign in, a bit of the overview of the event, and what the invitation was offering, such as a room for two right in the city where the event was taking place. When I looked at the sign-in form, it said name of cider mill. That felt like a minor detail, but a detail all the same. So I replied to the sender, informing them that I'm a podcaster and I'm not affiliated with any particular cider mill. I received a reply immediately. It stated, regarding the participation, the most important thing is for you to bring cider, which would allow us to invite and bear the cost of the 3 days of the event. If you're not a producer, usually journalists and bloggers come as representatives of cider mills for their country who supply the cider. Wow, I thought to myself, that is Ciderville, the land that I have been looking for, a country that is so forward-thinking in their business model that they know it is a worthy endeavor to support journalists and bloggers, and in my case, a podcast. In fact, the only active cider podcast in the world that weekly produces a cider show that is heard around the world. From my vantage, it felt like a long shot. I was 3 months shy of a one-year anniversary for Cider Chat, and up to that point, only Current Cider in Percocet, Pennsylvania, had stepped forward and said, yes, we'd like to join your Cider Going Up campaign to help you continue to produce this weekly podcast. And so it was with a heavy heart that I wrote back to La Cidra and said, I need to decline this invitation for this year. The reply came back immediately. You still have time to speak with a local producer. They're usually glad to sponsor a representative so their cider can participate in the awards. Sheesh, I thought, this person just doesn't take no for an answer. And so I replied, you have encouraged me to ask. It'll be revealing to see what kind of replies I get on such a short notice. That same day, I sent out a flurry of emails to commercial cider makers, encouraging them to send cider to this award ceremony that was gaining momentum in Europe, and to sponsor Cider Chat, so that I could attend this event and let listeners of this podcast, both in the U.S. and around the world, better understand the Asturian cider culture. I immediately received a reply from a commercial cider maker saying yes, we would donate $350 and we'll look into sending cider. Wow! It was true. There was a place in Ciderville where producers knew that supporting journalists and bloggers and this podcast was well worth their interest, not just for themselves, but for cider around the world. I had less than 15 days before I was scheduled to fly overseas, and so I put my faith into Ciderville. With one commercial cidery saying yes, I felt more would surely follow suit. And so I replied to La Cidra, yes, I am on my way. Time to cut to the chase here. You see, that commercial cidery that originally said yes never followed through. It felt a little bit, I suppose, like being an apple left hanging on the tree with winter coming. Going down. And to make matters worse, every single cidery I wrote to either declined or never replied. I'm not sure which was worse. Then, on September 15th, the day I was set to fly overseas, an email came in from Big Apple Hard Cider. It said, "Have fun in Spain. We didn't ship bottles, but have some drinks for us." Yay! Thanks to Big Apple Hard Cider and some key patrons in Ciderville, this podcast received up to $950 to help offset some of the costs for attending the International Hall of Gala Ciders. I didn't go to represent just one cidery. I was able to arrive in Asturias and represent the whole of Ciderville. I'd like to thank Asturias 21 Foundation and La Sidra Magazine and my guests today, who worked tirelessly behind the scenes to allow and accommodate my participation in the International Hall of Gala Ciders. And now, Ciderville, it is with deep respect and pleasure that I ask you to grab a glass and join this chat with Anzu Fernande, the International Delegate for Asturias 21 Foundation. Anzu is Asturian, speaks 15 languages, and is now learning his 16th language. When he's not working with La Sidra, the magazine, he is studying in his residency to become a neurosurgeon. I met Anzu outside in a cafe in Ovilla, which is a little bit inland from the port city of Gijón. There we sat, and he gave us an overview of the Asturian culture with cider. We will first begin with a reading that I found earlier that day while visiting the city of Nava and the Museo de la Sidra. And then we'll roll right into the chat with Anzu. It says in English, cider is a companion drink. The glass, the bottle, the bar you lean on, and even the voices are all shared. Cider is an invitation to sing. A celebration accompanied by cider never ends without the celebrants having sung together some tunes or another, with more or less fortune.
Buenos dias, Anzu.
Hey.
Ah, mi amoria.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, you too.
Have a seat.
Great. You are the international delegate. Is that how you defined yourself there?
That's how they find me.
Okay. So but far. You also work for La Sidra.
Yes. Well, La Sidra is a magazine which happens to be in a paper version, a PDF version, and an internet.
Yes.
It's a trilingual magazine.
Trilingual, yes. So Spanish?
Yeah, Spanish and Asturian in the written, and English Asturian in the internet.
How does Asturian differ from Spanish?
Like French and Italian or any other Latin-based language, some other Latin-based.
So Latin-based. So if I spoke Spanish, if I was going to speak Asturian, it would be really different, or would it be the difference between if I was in Chile?
No, it's... Well, the whole grammatic is different, the whole... It's another language, although we used to speak either a mixture, which happens a lot in Asturias, that people don't really know what they're speaking, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which happens with language in contact, or choose one of the... Mm-hmm. For example, I think you would get the difference in the gala dinner, because some speeches are in Asturian and some of them are in Spanish.
Okay, so I want to hold talking about the event for a little bit and just kind of focus on what you're doing with La Sidra. So you don't normally do, you're not normally the interviewee, you're the interviewer.
Well, First of all, I want to explain that La Sidra is part of a bigger organization, which is the Asturias 21 Foundation, which is a cultural foundation, which works for the sake of the Asturian culture and Asturian cider culture specifically. So inside that organization, there is where the magazine and the whole organization of these contests is.
And so that, if you could just say it a little bit slower for me.
Asturias 21, like the Century Foundation.
That's what I thought I heard, but I want to make sure.
Maybe I'm speaking too fast.
No.
And it's got some events all around the year, fixed ones usually, like three, four every year, with different topics. And in this case, the most international one is this one for which you're invited to.
Right. And this is the sixth year that this event is taking place?
Yes.
Okay. So La Sidra has been around for quite a while, right? In a magazine form, I'm going to say.
Actually, it's been maybe 16 years it is.
16 years.
I'm not sure. Actually, we did the 100th issue like 1 year or 2 years ago.
Okay. So that must be coming out every 2 months or so?
Monthly. It's a monthly publication.
Monthly.
Yes.
So the 100th issue over 16 years, though, it must have increased more in print.
Yeah. Actually, during these years, the magazine and all has been increased in any way. From the quality of the paper itself,
sure,
to the size and the content. We've got international sections and some international information going on. It's not something endogamic about ourselves.
Right.
Although all the major information is for and by the Asturian public.
What is the capacity that you work for? Are you a writer there?
Well,
the editor?
What I was trying to explain is that being a cultural foundation, some of the workers are not paid, but are volunteers,
okay,
or are collaborators, which means we could be paid eventually. But the point is what matters is the result of your work. So that's not my first job. I'm not even a journalist, actually. I only work eventually as journalist sometime of the time I'm helping with working for this organization.
I'm
interpreter and international delegate, but that's not my primary work.
Okay. What is your primary work?
I'm doctor and surgeon.
A doctor and surgeon. So you're what we call an MD. A medical profession.
Yes.
And what is your specialty?
So far surgery, but I'm specializing in something else, which depends on a series of exams.
Oh, so a surgeon, boy, that's a pretty heady, you must have very steady hands, right?
Well,
that's key. So when you're pouring the sidra,
helps,
it helps quite a bit, right?
You really... I don't know which helps to which. Yes.
Wow. Wow, okay. And so you're completing your studies in that. Are you in?
No, I finished my studies. I'm preparing, how do you call it, an entrance exams for a public work in a public hospital.
Is that what we would call a residency, that you have to do that for a number of years?
Yes, but yeah, correct.
And how many years do you have to
do? It depends on which specialty, which I don't know yet, but from 4 to 5.
4 to 5, wow. Well, that's a long road, but we need good surgeons.
Well,
so,
all right.
And certainly we need surgeons who know about sidra, because I think, you know, that keeps a well-balanced life. What I've been reading in the museum is not just a drinking, but it's a culture, it's an integration with people.
It's a national beverage.
Actually,
every single surgeon and fishermen and sportsmen, everybody around Asturias knows, drinks, and enjoys cider.
Yes, yeah.
So it's a very strong cultural fact.
Yeah. And have you ever, like, made it? Is this something that people would make in their own home? Or this is so... You have, okay.
Me and a high proportion of the Asturian population still do cider at home.
All right.
Not industrially,
right,
but there is a very strong culture of doing and enjoying your own cider for the family and in a small production level.
A small, like a demijohn, or we call them like a 5 gallon carboy, which would be
not that small,
a little bit bigger.
I don't know,
like a barrel. You make a barrel.
My father like would kill me because I don't remember the capacity of the barrels in my parking, actually, which is where the cider is. Don't know. Maybe 2,000 liters or 3,000.
Wow. Well, okay. Well, that's quite a bit.
We drink cider every day. We need lots of cider.
I love that. I love that. And is that from apples in your family's orchard or?
And the neighbors. It's some kind of collective working.
Okay.
Well, this fact of making cider in our own houses is very old. It's a very old tradition. And usually the neighbors sell or lend or give away their apples for a person who is very skilled doing green cider and which has the yalar, the cider mill.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when the cider is done and it remains in the cask for a year or so, when you open it, you invite all your neighbors and all your family and all your friends which helped you in the first place to do the cider.
Sure.
And that is called espicha, which is, there's no direct translation, but would be as popular drinking meeting.
Popular drinking meeting.
Yes, sounds good.
Espicha,
yeah.
Espicha.
And it's the fact of opening a brand new cask and finishing it.
Finishing?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So usually the traditional celebrations, you know when they start, but you don't know when it finishes.
I guess not.
So it can last a day or three or whatever, depending on the size of the cask and the people invited. And you will be in one of them.
Excellent.
Maybe the industrial perception of that, the evolution, after that being a fact of the family and the friends, some of them begin to charge with an entrance for an access for this party in which there is also food.
Right. Right.
And now the cider mills, the professional cider mills, do that as well for visits and for
tourists.
Because it's the kind of meal you have in a cider mill.
Yes, yeah. I was being explained that by the woman at the museum, all the different foods and that are probably very traditional and local here.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, it's like it's mostly like snacks.
Yeah.
Traditional, but in this.
Do you call them tapas?
No. But.
No.
It's kind of the, well, the size you would find very different to Spanish tapas or whatever you know me for.
Okay.
But the point is to have some traditional food to enjoy and to pair with the cider and obviously not to get drunk that easily, because if you're going to stay 3 days drinking, you'll need something.
Should I change my flight plan now if I'm going to be involved in it? Because it sounds like I might not know when I'm getting home. Should that be a concern of mine? Because I feel I would be rude if I leave if we start this celebration.
Celebrations will be long, but will be funny.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about it.
All right, good. Darn, I was hoping you say
some
no
of,
change
some of
flight.
Them, we call them working lunch, so they look more professional, but they still are speeches.
I know there's going to be a competition.
Yes.
And I know that Cidra will be part of that. What are the tasting notes when a person is tasting the Asturian Cidra? And I know that it also differs within this region too, because I've been in the Basque area having Cidra there. Mm-hmm. It would probably be different than the Asturian.
Yes, correct.
So I'm wondering, let's just start with this region that we're in right now. If I'm tasting that, what am I looking for in the tasting notes? Is that
For Asturian cider, we appreciate bitterness.
Bitterness.
Mm-hmm. We made a 60% cider, which is bitter or bittersweet apples.
Okay.
So, no, it's 60% bittersweet, 30% bitter, and 30% sweet. So only 30% of all the apples for cider is sweet.
Wow. So there's a lot of cider orchards here. Cider apple orchards.
Yes, a lot. And actually, this is a not very industrialized country. The main production still be the primary products, foods and so on. And actually, it's a quite big sector, the apple producers.
Yeah.
They've got associations and they've got their own representation among the cider mills. So.
Wow. I do want to, maybe we could just skip there for a minute. So are most of the cider mills, if they're a cider mill, then they're milling up their own apples. But are there large apple growers who do that, produce the juice, and then bring it to a cider maker?
Here is not well seen at all to buy apple juice. Besides, the producers don't make juice at all, so they only produce the apples, certain varieties, because we are very picky with the varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I should begin from the proper beginning.
Okay.
There are up to 2,500 only Asturian autochthonous varieties of cider apples. 200 of them endemic, which you cannot find anywhere else. And 15 of them are inside the denomination of origin. And for every brand of natural cider, I'm speaking about the natural traditional cider, we use like 6 varieties. So every single cider bottle has been made with a balance of at least 6 different varieties of this bittersweet, sweet and all.
Wow.
So yes, there are very specific productions of apples with that species of apples in every single region of Asturias, actually. And cider producers buy not just random apples, but that amount of that species of that variety of bittersweet apple.
The Asturian cider is, you're looking for that bitter. What would be the difference between that and the Basque cider?
Well, Basque cider is quite modern in comparison. They have been doing very nice cider, and they have different standards. For example, they like very much acidity. For us, it's quite too acid. Actually, with the levels of acidity, you couldn't sell that without calling that vinegar here. Because up to a certain level, you have to do... to name it differently. They appreciate maybe not that bitter, but acid.
The acid. So that's part of their culture there. They're tending more towards the acidity. It's not just because that's the kind of apples they have.
No. Actually, some of the apples are in common because we are neighbors, actually.
Wow.
Well, Asturias is different because the extraordinary amount of varieties, which don't happen everywhere, they have the different apples as well, and it's more related with the way they do cider. For us, it's been like a very long tradition. Actually, Asturian cider has the very first mention in history in the world, which is from the 60 BC by the Roman historian Strabon, which he said that they scarcely got wine, but they drink a lot of cider. So that would be the very first mention of cider in the world. So we are kind of proud of that. That's the starting point of all our tradition going on until now. So that is why we've got so many standards for literally everything related with cider, because we have been doing that for centuries, and we know how do we like it and how it should be done from our standards, from our point of view. And
I was in France and I was speaking to the president of the Appellation Control there. There's also a president here of different associations for cidre too.
Yes, a lot of associations. There's an association for denomination of origin cider. Another one for, well, local associations from each...
from each region?
Well, we call it councils. Geographic divisions are councils, so there are different associations of producers for apple and for cider in different councils. And there's another for the cider bars. Every district has an association.
Cider bar association?
Yes.
And that's for making sure that they have the qualified... person pouring it, or that they...
Well, they got their own standards, but this is a point to look for their own interest in the sector, because the cider sector is very competitive in Asturias.
In what way is it?
In every single way. We produce 100 million of liters per year only of natural cider, and
50 million of sparkling. So the market is huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Yeah, I could see that.
So there is a very strong competition between cider producers, apple producers, cider bars.
Okay. And people are competing on different metals, on the consumer's palate, on probably brands and creating a certain brand. Is that a good interpretation of the competitiveness?
I don't think
level,
anybody, not Asturian, could understand the level of competitive aim that there is here. For example, we've got cider pourers competitions, because in our culture,
okay,
we serve the cider pouring it.
Oh, pouring.
Yes.
Yes.
So there's a specific figure in every cider bar, which is the cider pourer, which
right,
is not as it's not a common waiter,
right,
because they have to have some courses and some, let's call it, degrees of
right,
cider pouring.
Right.
And they've got in every, almost every single celebration, popular celebrations around the councils, they've got cider pourer contest, scoring for a national cider pourer contest.
And where is that held? In Asturias?
Yes.
Of course. Of course.
It's the only place in the world where
right,
the cider is poured so far.
What city would that competition be held in?
I think it's Nava, but I'm not sure.
Nava? Okay. Is that like once a year, like in July? Because there's a big festival there in July in Nava.
The championship, yes. But all throughout the year, there's the...
smaller competitions that you're building up towards.
Some of them score for the national.
Right.
Yeah. So a part of that, there's some competitions between the cider bars, and they organize the celebration of the district or the
mm-hmm,
village.
Wow.
So they try to be the best in
wow,
some ways, as well as the cider mills, try to make the best cider for the general public, which would be the traditional cider, or to be the most innovative.
Again, for the person who's like really uninformed about cider here, you go into the restaurant or the cideria,
yeah,
and they pour you that, I'm going to call it a long pour. What is it called, though?
Pulín. A glass of cider.
Right,
yes.
A glass of cider. It's not filled up. When you're served it, you should not shoot it back like a shot, but you
yes,
drink it back.
You drink it in one shot, I would say one time,
mm-hmm,
because the reason why we pour is to release the carbonic gas, so it actually enhances a lot the flavor and the tasting of the cider.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point of drinking it fast,
mm-hmm,
before the gas goes away.
Right.
So it tastes much, much better.
Mm-hmm. And you save a little bit at the end, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, because cider is a very cultural, communal fact, which is always about sharing, about a social beverage, actually. It's,
right,
it's a very social beverage. So we share a glass for all the people drinking,
mm-hmm,
maybe two if there's a lot of people. So you drink for a little bit from the way you drank and pass the glass.
And pass the same glass,
yes,
because as you throw it out, you're cleaning the glass.
Yes, yes.
Right.
That's it. So nowadays, still this feeling of sharing among everybody.
Yes, yes.
So it's, as well, it's not well seen that they serve cider with lots of glasses for everybody, for example.
Sure. And if you're in a restaurant, if you know, some cider tourist comes to Asturias in their restaurant, and they are served a bottle of cider.
Yes.
Is there any kind of like proper way so you're not looking like a total cider
well,
dope?
Fortunately,
you know?
They've got cider pourers for you. But
so,
yes, they've got some kind of corks
right,
for trying to pour it from the table. Lots of devices to auto pour, like machines.
Right, right.
And devices not to spill all the cider around.
Right, right.
So yes.
But if you have it on your table, you're not waiting for.
Yes, you're waiting for the cider pourer, actually.
You're waiting for the
yes,
cider pourer to come and
there's
pour
a cider
it. Pourer, so you drink it, and
yes,
then you...
Yes.
So you don't normally pour your own bottle.
You can.
You could.
You can, so depending on the
sure,
on the cider bar. Or you can say, okay, I'll fill myself my cider. It's totally fine. But the work of the cider pourer is to measure, for example, the frequency of how often does he pour
oh, okay,
to everybody,
yeah,
and who is drinking fast and who is drinking slow,
right,
and the measures of the
mm-hmm,
It's not that easy for them.
No, no, especially if you have a room full of people who are thirsty.
Yes.
You have to be really fast.
And for example, in many cafeterias, they've got cider as well. So we can just, I don't know, here, but we can ask for a bottle of cider and pour in just here.
Pouring, right, I see, yeah. And so when you're in the cideria, you get your pour, you could pour it yourself, you wait for the pour to come in, you drink it back, and the low alcohol makes it very conducive for actually being able to drink quite a bit of cider, right? It's like a low alcohol, it's like 4.5 or...
4.5 is the average.
The average.
There are some ciders that go to 5 or to 6.
Yes,
the average is a very low alcoholic beverage. Mm-hmm. So
it's very conducive to enjoying.
Yes.
And the standards for sidra in Osteria is it's natural fermentation, meaning that there's no yeast added.
Yes, correct. We use only wild yeast.
Only
for the traditional one.
Oh,
for the
natural
cider. Yes.
And is it like one designated wine yeast, or everybody kind of has
wild yeast?
Wild yeast. I thought so, but I wasn't sure. That I heard it. Thank you.
We are doing some research to isolate some yeasts, but actually the merit of doing cider is that you have to do it with your own skills. You don't depend. You can check with the chemistry, but you don't mess with the chemistry to do what you want.
Right, right.
So
right.
You have to select the correct apples, correct variety. You have to smash them and to get the apple juice in the correct timing of the year, to get the right levels of acidity and mainly sugar, the Brix levels. From that, you've got to mature it in, for example, wooden cask or iron cask, depending on what you're looking for.
Right.
You have to maintain and check periodically the levels of acidity, of sugar, or anything. And especially, you have to blend.
Blending
cider.
That doesn't happen at the time of the crushing of the apples?
No. Blending is once the fermentation has begun and the alcohol levels begin to rise based on the sugar of the mixture, you can mix the different ciders you've got from the same starting point to make a balanced outcome. This is useful because usually the productions are huge and you want your production to be homogeneous. So you want it to be all the same and the highest quality. So blending is a very important fact in Asturian traditional cider, which we call trasegar. It's to blend the cider to balance the levels in the way you want.
At the point that the cider is being made, am I correct in assuming that you have single variety ciders or you have a blend of apples? You blend that afterwards?
Yes.
Okay.
Traditionally, we've got this six variety mixture, and then you ferment it, and you've got some different outcomes depending on each wild yeast on each cask. So you have to control knowing how it's done, but you don't know which yeast is going on, and you have to control the temperature, you have to control everything. So that is where the skill of the cider maker is. In more modern times, nowadays there are some single variety ciders, but this is not very traditional. It's something very innovative and with high appreciation lately.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there has been any kind of changes in more recent years. What are you seeing besides that, the single variety? What else, things are you seeing?
I'm glad to say that it was mainly us from the magazine which encouraged some evolution in some research regarding cider. Both in ice cider, cider liquors, sparkling ciders, and single varieties, because a part of the work we do is to travel to other cider producing countries and share the novelties and the news and what's going on in other countries.
Right.
Because Asturian cider culture could be very closed in. So we've got a very strong tradition that sometimes prevents us from learning a little bit more about what's new in the world of cider. Because the average people don't want new cider. Want the cider
the way it is.
They have been drinking, they have been enjoying, their parents did and their great-grandparents did as well.
True.
So that's a trend. But there's also the trend to innovate and to do it in the highest quality possible, because as Asturians they got, or we got, the this proud to keep to be the outstanding producers of cider. Mm-hmm. So you have to keep up with the levels of the international cider. Mm-hmm. So in this frame is where the new tendencies and trends of cider are going on.
When people come to this region, are you seeing an uptick of cider tourists coming to Asturias?
Yes.
And when would you say that that started, that you started seeing people coming specifically just for cider outside of this country, not within this country itself, but coming from an international audience coming directly here?
It happened for quite a while, because we are a very strange country in some aspects, that we are very, very small and very closed because of some geographic frontiers like the mountains. So we've got some aspects of the culture that you don't find out anything similar in elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So some people that come just by chance or attending for other reasons, because of the landscape or whatever, and they find something that they didn't expect. And maybe they know that we had cider, but they don't know the deepness of the roots mm-hmm. in our culture, mm-hmm. how important cider can be in our culture. Mm-hmm. So from these visitors, there's a continuous affluence of international visitors, and we of course promote that by attending other international events related with cider or with gastronomy, representing Asturian cider. This year we've been in 6 different international events taking place from Germany to Denmark, everywhere, mm-hmm. in which we represent Asturian cider cultures and encourage people to come here and to, mm-hmm. and to know what's going on here. And in the same way, Asturian people to go to those other countries, they may not know they make cider as well, but to visit and enjoy another cider culture.
Right, of course. In France, they have a cider route, and in the UK, there's like a cider route. They don't necessarily call it that, but for like the different countries out there, West Country in the UK. Is there anything online that, if you're a cider tourist and you're coming into the airport here, that you could say, okay, well, these are the different spots along the way?
Well, yes and no. First of all, you don't have only spots, because it's massive.
It's massive.
It's massive. From the very top of Asturias to the most lost country, village in the middle of the mountains, mm-hmm. they got cider.
Right.
And they know how to do it. They know how to drink it, and they would enjoy sharing with any tourist coming to know about their culture. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some places that are more specific for some
tourists.
Kind of cider making. For example, Sichuan is the council where the highest cider consumption. The average of cider consumption in Asturias is 45 liters per person and year. Per person.
That's pretty
and
good.
And in Sichuan, it's 65.
And
liters.
What is it? 65 liters?
Liters per person and year. Only speaking about natural cider, leaving all the sparkling and cider derivatives and liquors and everything else. So, for example, Nava is a very historically cider-producing council, for example. In every single town, there's a specific place with an oldest tradition compared to this city. For mm-hmm. example, here in Rubio, we've got Gascona, which is called the Cider Boulevard. A long street, only cider bars.
In this town here?
Yes,
in town.
Rubio, yes.
Okay. I'm not on it right now, am I?
No.
Okay.
You should visit it.
Yes.
It's very, very famous here in Rio, but it's not a strange fact that every single village, every single town around here has its own cider district, their own cider, mm-hmm. cider streets. I'm sure that in every average city, there's not a single street without at least one cider bar.
So I was in a cideria the other night, and they put on a green bottle with no label.
Yes.
So when that happens, what can you assume that is in that bottle? Is that like their house cider, or I know that the bottles are cold, so the labels fall off.
Yeah,
and things.
That's most,
part of it.
Yes.
But how do you know what cider you're drinking if it doesn't
well,
have a label on it?
You know which cider you're drinking, and you should. And if they, when you go to a cider bar or to a restaurant, you ask what palos, which brands of cider do you got?
Okay, right.
And they tell which brands from which cider mills.
Okay.
Because each cider mill can have more than one brand.
Right.
So there are bars who have just one or two or three, and then there are some that are proud of serving seven or six different cider brands. So you choose, or you ask the waiter, which is this year this brand is good, what do you suggest? So it's very, very much like wine.
Mm.
In that way.
Yes, absolutely. Different vintages over different years.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
How does the 2015 vintage look? Because that'd be last year, because 2016 hasn't been made yet. So how was the apple production for 2015, last year?
2015.
So we're in 2016 right now.
Yes.
So the cider that you're drinking now came from last
yes,
year.
Yes, usually the cider we drink is from the year before.
Right,
as well.
Right. So how was it last year for apple
well,
production?
I can't... Well, for the whole production, you mean? It was a great year. Actually, I think they've got a... growing in the market of 14%, if I'm right. I can look it up.
In the...
Because it's
in
been
what market
a great
are you
year.
Talking about?
No, no, in
too.
General market. I
okay.
don't know. There are up to more than 90 cider mills, just industrial cider mills only in Asturias.
Industrial cider mills?
Yes. Just,
wow.
Yeah, and like 5 years ago, there were like 120. Just industrial.
Just industrial.
Not counting every single person that does make cider in their own houses, which happens a lot.
So it was a, you said it was 120, and now it's at 900, or is that, no, am I hearing that correctly? I want to make sure I'm getting that. The amount of cider mills was 120, and now it's gone up to 900.
90, yes, well
that
some cider mills
down.
Engulf, and yeah.
Oh, I see, they get
engulf others.
I see,
some,
right,
some
okay, got it.
Low quality or low production
right,
cider
right,
mills
right,
disappear,
right.
And some other are created. There are some new cider mills, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... is the opposite of a dying culture.
Right, it's
so
growing.
There are some very big cider mills who buy other cider mills to increase their production.
Mm-hmm.
Next, come with Anzu and I as we go to a different location in Ovilia. There we have a bottle of sidra, and he does the pour. Although you cannot see it on this audio, there are many photos going up at the Cider Chat Facebook page, on Instagram at Cider Chat Ciderville, on Twitter at Cider Chat, and at the show notes for episode number 62. Next, I'll be asking Anzu how he describes cider to others, and we'll be talking a bit more about the political landscape and Asturias' place within this region.
A lot of cider makers will say, I'm still trying to figure out how to explain cider.
Yeah.
Because so many people don't know what it is. I mean, here in Asturias, they're going to know it. But in different
yeah.
parts of the United States or other parts of the world, they don't necessarily get it. So what is cider? How would you explain
cider,
that?
It's an alcoholic beverage made... in origin, exclusively from apples. Fermented, and drunk. The very first mention ever of cider is Roman, and the word is citos, which only means juice. They had to... Well, when they came to Asturias, they used that word citos to refer to apple juice, because they didn't have a concept for proper cider either.
Mm.
So from that on, from the 50 BC, there's the term citos, or cider, which is an alcoholic beverage made from apple. Then you can add something else, and it's cider with everything
mm-hmm.
that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But the starting point is that.
That, just the apple.
And we're speaking
juice.
About natural cider.
Right.
And it's not filtered, then you can filter it, but it's not the original.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Then the term evolved into the second language in which it appears, which is Italian, which is Citera.
Citera.
mm-hmm. is the a part of the student is the next mm-hmm. the reference, and they still refer to that, to cider made from apple. So for us it would be unnecessary to say apple cider, as happens in some countries. You have to know where the term comes from. Mm-hmm. So then you explain, why do you call your cider hard cider? What is hard? Or yeah. what is? Right. So the standards are these historically. Then you continue and you find cider in very different places, but the origin is that, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or the oldest origin known. Obviously, there's cider in other countries that appeared because it's a very Celtic-based beverage, by the way.
Say more about that.
Okay. Asturias, as many other countries in the Atlantic, are Celtic-based culture, as Ireland, as Wales, as Cornwall, as Brittany, countries in which cider appears. Mm-hmm. And those are the oldest birthplaces of cider, because Celts wanted to drink alcohol from fruits, and we got apples, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. as Romans got grapes and make
right.
wine.
Right.
So it's a very Celtic-based. So even in countries that are not Celtic-based, but due to a diaspora, you know, a migration, mm-hmm. cider appears, which is the case of Canada. They make cider there because the immigrants mm-hmm. were from countries, Celtic-based, that used to make cider, mm-hmm. from Ireland, from Brittany. That's why you can't call, for example, French cider, because there's Breton cider, Norman cider,
right.
which have nothing to
regions,
do with each other.
Regions.
And yeah, but they come from nations based on very different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So that's the starting point.
The weather here, what I've been noticing since I came here, is just such a perfect apple-growing region.
Yeah,
I mean, you land and it's like the green
milk.
Everywhere. It just makes absolute sense.
And it's
sense.
Raining every day.
Yeah, and just but it's temperate in a way that...
Yes,
I mean, do you have it where you get snow? You get
yes.
snow in the mountains.
Yeah, and Shishon too. Shishon
oh, really?
Is in, yeah.
No kidding.
I live in Shishon. Well, I lived in Shishon.
How much snow would you get there?
Not much.
And it would like melt that day if it came down.
In Shishon, yes, because it's
yes.
the coast. And, but
right.
you can see the beaches snow.
Oh, wow. That's hard to imagine.
Because it's Atlantic.
Yeah.
And we've got.
Atlantic, yeah.
Between Spain and us, we've got one of the highest mountains in the whole peninsula. That
How high is that?
But now,
see.
1,200
meters.
Yeah,
meters.
Yes. Not that much, but
right.
Quite high.
They're pretty impressive. The mountains that I'm seeing.
Yeah. So that creates a geographical barrier, which
yes.
gives us a unique climate.
Yes.
Well, not unique because it's very linked to all Atlantic region.
Yeah.
It's the same weather as Ireland. As Brittany, as
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. part of Basque Country,
mm.
so it has nothing to do with, for example, Portugal or France or Spain. So it's a.
But you're seeing cider in Portugal too. Like
yeah.
I don't know about cider in Portugal.
They're doing it now.
They're doing it now. Will there be any
yes.
from here?
Yes,
wow.
they will.
That's going to be incredible.
At the cafe, the woman comes out and delivers us a green bottle, that says only one word. Without the need of a label. It says, Sidra. Anzu does the long pour and passes it to me, and I take a sip.
How do you find it?
Well, I find it delicious. I notice how the temperature changes, too.
Yes.
And goes into different smells here, too, like...
But do you remember the gulp you had when I didn't pour it for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's
nothing
kinda,
to do with.
It's almost like it's like oxidized a little bit. You know when
yes,
it,
yes.
and it just it's still
yes,
it's
correct.
like kind of that cardboardy type
it's
of piece.
Exact the chemical procedure that goes on.
Yeah.
Oxidation
yeah.
and losing of the carbonic acid.
Yeah.
But is that? It's oxidation. It's a product that has lots of antioxidants,
mm-hmm.
but is based on fruit, so it depends a lot of time.
Yes.
If you let it die, the oxidation goes on and all the organoleptic properties change
mm-hmm.
Within minutes.
How often do the cider makers come together and get really technical, like the level that we're talking about?
Or are they every just, year.
Every year.
I mean, every day.
Every day.
They have enologists.
Okay.
They are enologists, and right. they have enologists working for them. Mm-hmm. Say, I'm not happy with this acidity level. Because now industrials have to keep up with the technologies and the knowledge.
Right.
And they don't say it's too sweet. They say it's 20 bricks over my expecting level. Mm. But they change the way they speak by speaking about the same. Mm-hmm. My grandfather did make cider 150 years ago. And would speak the same about the cider and a producer that's mm-hmm. it right now. Mm-hmm. Different terms, obviously, but would assess the acidity, would mm-hmm. speak about the proportion of apples, would speak about the necessity of blending it or not, and which wooden cask to blend it with. Mm-hmm. So they have to be technical. They mm-hmm. have a very picky, quite knowledgeable market.
Yes,
to
they
deal
have to.
With.
Yeah, people are going to really notice that.
Asturian people are quite expert in cider. You don't fool anyone with a low quality cider. Everybody will know.
Everybody will know.
Yes.
And what would they notice?
From the cork, the temperature, the number of glasses. We've got a standard for everything.
Right.
I could have an argument with the waiter just to give too many glasses,
right.
or to give that instead of having a cider pourer, or not having with.
But this is kind of like a little tourist area where people
yes,
don't really
yes, but
know.
So. These girls over here that are 15, were joking about we had two glasses for two people.
Oh, they noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
These girls that have no cider culture at all, just they decided inherited.
Right.
Just is we could speak as genetically inherited because they didn't study and know anything.
They
it's just
know
what they got from their parents, and
right.
they were joking about we having
right,
two glasses.
Right.
So they will.
So is it always like one glass between two people, or if
three or four or five?
Three or four.
Maybe
right.
if you are in need to do it faster, maybe you have more glasses, but you know the concept.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You always have to share.
Yeah. You share.
Maybe you have one
right.
three glasses to share among 12, but you don't put 12 glasses.
Right.
I mean, you could
right.
put three or four, nobody would tell anything. But the point is, we've got standards for everything, and a bad cider with no madre, or filtered, a filtered bottle sold as natural cider,
mm-hmm.
it would be illegal to be sold as cider, for
Interesting.
Example.
Interesting.
And there you have it. So much clarity within the culture on exactly what cider is, how it should be poured, and so many standards. Everywhere you turn in Asturias, there is a giant wooden barrel, not just for a cidery, but for the presentation of sidra, or as we know it, cider, throughout the land. And now, Ciderville, I would like to announce that Anzu Fernandez has been selected as Cider Chat's pick for the sexiest cider dude of 2017. This title is not given freely, nor is it due to the fact that Asturias happens to have some of the biggest cider cojones around. I mean, geez, Louise, Roman historian Esteban said sometime back in 60 BC about Asturias, that they scarcely have wine, but they drink a lot of cider? Well, I'm thinking that this American might now think twice about bragging next time about the big whoop fact that President John Adams drank cider 200 years ago. Anzu is the international delegate for Asturian 21 Foundation, speaks 15 languages, working on a 16th, works and volunteers for La Sidra, and is a medical doctor who is in residency to become a neurosurgeon. His resume is impressive, but what really inspired this podcaster is his cider bold. He is both knowledgeable and has a keen ability to speak with grace and conviction on cider, not only in Asturias, but in the rest of the world. And yes, that is not only intriguing, it is exactly what cider needs right now in 2017. his unabashed view that the cider industry should, without a doubt, support their country's cider journalists, and yes, a podcast like Cider Chat, which helps promote cider around the globe, is expected in Asturias, and as such, a no-brainer for other cider producers around the world. Yes, Anzu isn't afraid to speak up and provide the cider community with a healthy boot in the ass. Plus the fact that Asturians know how to party like no other people I have ever met in the world absolutely seals the deal for his new title. Congratulations, Doc. All the best for 2017. Thanks for rolling in 2017 with me, Ciderville. You be good until we meet again. Rio in color, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Asturian people are quite expert in cider. You don't fool anyone with low quality cider.
Yeehaw!